Welcome to Blog Talk Radio in high fidelity.
Hello, hockey fans, and welcome once again to the Vegas Hockey Podcast. I'm Mark Warner along with Chris Lisa.
We are now going to be affiliated with the inaugural launch of the Hockey Writers podcast page over at thehockeywriters.com.
We're talking with J.D. Styles from Cali Sports News, reporting live from the Stanley Cup Finals. And today we're being joined by the first general manager in Las Vegas franchise history, George McPhee.
With Pat Quinn, you know, I'm likely the finest man I've ever met in my life.
This is the Vegas Hockey Podcast. We're talking with Quinn Malarchuk.
There's something about George McPhee that everybody says is a good pick.
This is the Vegas Hockey Podcast, and we're talking with Dana Lane, play-by-play voice of the UNLV Rebel Hockey Team and owner of Dana Lane Sports. Joining us now is Matt Pryor of thehockeywriters.com. He's coming to us from the Dallas Stars training camp. Hello, hockey fans, and welcome once again to another episode of the Vegas Hockey Podcast. I am Mark Warner along with Lisa, and today we're going to be joined by a special guest, friend of the show, J.D. Styles of Cali Sports News, NHL Director of Content over there. Always a good time talking with Jeff. Dana Lane's coming in a little bit later after that. Break down all of the numbers and notes from the Stanley Cup Final. Let me bring in Chris. Good day to you, sir.
Good day to you, sir.
It is a nice day out here. It's starting to be spring. We're going to hit 96 today, so springtime in Vegas.
Wow.
Yep, that's it. That's our deal out here. Spring is officially upon us.
Absolutely. So this is we got the Stanley Cup Finals, obviously game 3 tonight. And I, reading the different newspapers, if you will, it sounds like this could be an eventful week for the Vegas Golden Knights.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Lots going on. We'll get into some of that more with Dana when we get him later on in the show, about 10:50 Pacific time. They did just sign one kid, ex-LA Kings draft pick, I believe Thomas Hajka. Is how you pronounce his name?
Yep. I think that sounds right.
Yeah, H-Y-K-A. Looks like Hajka. Sounds like Hajka. Must be Hajka, yeah. Right? He went overseas, exactly. Played for a little bit, probably matured a little bit as a player. And we'll see what he can bring. Probably be in St. Louis next year. Or Chicago, I'm sorry. But starting to fill out the roster. There's been a couple rumors. Of some possible deals starting to leak out for the Golden Knights. There was one middle of the week or so where it would leave TVR exposed if we took him and then agreed to a trade for Marcus Kruger and giving up some picks going the other way. So there's a lot of stuff going on, with the Golden Knights. Hard to tell what's real and what's fact, but
Yeah, I did read that George McPhee was quoted in saying that he was hoping he could announce some deals this coming week, and it sounded like acquiring draft pick kind of situation. And I would imagine that McPhee is going to be very protective of as many picks as he can get. If he's going to be trading any to get an established player, he must be doing, four or five other deals to get picked. So he wants to, you got to remember something. All these different teams, your team, the Kings, my team, the Islanders, you have the NHL roster, you have an AHL roster, you have numerous kids in your prospect pipeline, playing in Canada, playing in Europe, playing in Russia. They don't got anybody. And even into the expansion draft, you know, they're going to have basically, you know, right now they're going to have seven draft prospects, if you will. Now, I'm sure it will wind up being more than that after all these deals he makes. But my point being is all these other teams, they probably have about, I'm just going to spitball here, I don't know, 30 kids in their prospect pipeline, you know. So they need to get as many draft picks as they can get. That makes sense. I expect him to be wheeling and dealing.
Yeah, well, it's. I think Pierre LeBrun said it could be the busiest 2.5-3 weeks in the history of the NHL. So, sit back, buckle your seat, and get your popcorn ready, as they say. Gonna be a busy time. We might have to break in and do a couple midweek shows just to keep everybody up to date. We'll see how things go.
I don't know how you feel, my friend, but real quick, want to get your take. I've read a lot of rumors of teams trying to trade McPhee, you know, bad salary cap contracts. And I have to see that to believe it. I don't believe it one iota, unless he just got a treasure trove of picks and prospects back. I don't see it.
No, I don't. That was from everything that he said, and if you in what he did with Washington, that's would be outside the box, if you will. That would be totally against what I feel, and I think most others feel, is going to be his philosophy to build the team. I don't see, like you said, unless there's some kind of something that's a game changer, if you will. I think we can expect picks and prospects and not too much of that. Let me trade for Pavel Datsyuk. I think the Coyotes have Datsyuk and Pronger on their roster, and it's like $11 million.
Do they come off
finally this year?
Yeah, I don't
see. That's unfortunate. Losing Pronger is really gonna hurt that decor in Arizona, and with Datsyuk, you know, that's a real hit to the forward core out there. You know, that I've said before, I think these things are a joke. I really, 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 really don't think that George McPhee has any interest in doing something like that. Talking with him, and just seeing, you know, paying attention to what's going on. I'm not buying those reports at all. Well, I see JD Styles is on the line a little bit early. I'm going to go ahead and bring in JD. I don't know what his time constraints are. Let me rock and roll. Hey, Jeff, is that you, buddy?
Oh, it's me. And finally, JD Styles, a.k.a. me, is back on the Vegas Hockey Podcast. Thanks for having me back,
time,
guys.
Buddy. It's about time. For those of you who don't know, you can – you can follow Jeff on Twitter at JD_Styles, STYLZ. He is the NHL content director for CaliSportsNews.com, credentialed member at last year's Stanley Cup final, and all things Kings hockey, too. If you want to go and listen to his podcast during the season, he does a post-game show for all the LA Kings road games. It's still at the @RoadRulesTalk, tell them where to find your podcast, Jeff.
Yeah, you can find it on Blog Talk Radio. It's LA Kings Road Talk Radio, which I also heavily advertise on my Facebook page and Twitter at JD_Styles_. But also on Twitter, we're at Kings Road Talk. So you can find us on Twitter as well.
I don't think I'm ever going to get your Twitter handle right. I put the _ in the wrong place. I don't know what it is, man. I apologize.
Quick little story.
Well, yeah.
Quick little story about that, Mark and Chris. By the way, Chris, how you doing?
I'm doing good, buddy. It's great to hear you back on the show.
Great to talk to both of you guys. JD Styles, the reason why it's spelled the way that it's spelled and there's an _ at the end was not by choice, but when I first actually got on Twitter, see, JD Styles was my stage name back in my musician days when I had a band. And for whatever reason, I just
there
got
go.
JD, obviously my initials, they added the Styles with a Z at the end. So when I finally went on Twitter trying to figure out what this hoopla of this Twitter and these tweet things are about many years ago, I actually tried to get at JD Styles, simple as that, and I could not. There were so many JD Styles already. So I thought I was being creative with the whole JD Styles thing. So I added an underscore because Mark, as a longtime LA Kings fan, if you remember the Chevy logo Gretzky Robitaille era, logo of the LA Kings, there was that little line at the end of Kings where it looks like the letters were skating on ice. That's where I got the idea of the underscore. So it's JD Styles sliding on the ice. I got it from the Kings, from the Chevy logo era. So there you go.
All right. All right. That's not bad. That's not bad. What's, what's your take on the final so far? It's been, if you could erase, let's say 15 minutes of hockey, would you think the Preds were the better team?
I think the Preds are the better team, period. But, here's the thing. I've been finding these Stanley Cup finals, bizarre, but super entertaining and interesting, which is why I love hockey and why I love the Stanley Cup. Because really, even if you look at the stats, like if you look at the actual stats from shots and faceoffs and hits and puck possession, Nationals destroying and overwhelming Pittsburgh. But then you look at the final score and who's leading in the series, and it's like Nationals not even in the series. And that's what I love about hockey, because you never truly know what's going to happen. But I think Nationals has been overall technically the better team. They have been outplaying Pittsburgh minus, like you said, 50 minutes or whatever the case may be in certain parts of games. They've been out shooting, out puck possessing. They weren't as good in the faceoff circle in game one, but they took that away from Pittsburgh in game two. They're out hitting, yet Pittsburgh are just being so super patient and opportunistic, and you can tell that's probably based on their Stanley Cup experience, including all their young guys who were rookies last year, but got that experience of going to the Stanley Cup and winning. You can totally see their experience overwhelming Nashville, even though Nashville's attacking as best as they can. But Pittsburgh, one thing Pittsburgh definitely does have, besides patience and being opportunistic, is better goaltending, because two-time rookie sensation Matt Murray, and I say two-time because in one of those Ken Dryden Patrick Roy technicalities where as a rookie they didn't play enough games in regular season, so they weren't that wasn't counted as a rookie season, yet they led their team in the playoffs to the Stanley Cup. Matt Murray this year technically is a rookie, so and now he's a rookie sensation again in the Stanley Cup final for the second year in a row, has completely outplayed Pekka Rinne. And Pekka Rinne, and if you guys remember, the last time I was on the show, my sleeper playoff surprise pick was the Nashville Predators. And I remember saying that if Pekka Rinne can play to the top of his ability, watch out, because he's lights out.
That's right.
And he was all the way to the final. Before the final, he was, because he had a ridiculous save percentage of like 950 something out of this world.
Uh-huh.
And then they get to the finals, and he's human again. So right now, you know what? Pittsburgh is just experienced. They're opportunistic. They're striking when it matters. Those three goals in game two in the third period, what was it? Three goals in 3 minutes and 30 seconds. And all of them were from defensive turnovers from Nashville. All of them were odd man rushes. All of them is like Rinne, or at least two of them, was Rinne giving up bad rebounds, one huge, one small. And Rennie's been springing these little leaks where he even when he should have the puck, it squeaks into the net anyways. So
right now,
I'm saying Nashville. Yeah, isn't it? And yeah. Overall, Nashville, I think overall is the better team, but Pittsburgh is doing with what they have, and they're just showing that experience does matter in the Stanley Cup final. So bizarre, but super entertaining.
Well, we were doing last week's show, and I want to get Chris's take on this. And Chris said the two things that he thought were going to be tipping the scales towards the Penguins, if you will, were the experience factor and also special teams. Chris, what effect has special teams had on this series so far?
Well, I've been really impressed with the Predators' penalty kill. It feels like at times, watching the first two games, they're the ones with the extra man when they've been shorthanded. But I don't know how you guys feel about it, but I feel like the reason that the Preds are down 2-0, I agree with pretty much everything both you and JD said, is Pecorine. I was worried about him coming in. He played great in the playoffs other than a game or two against the Ducks and the Blues. And quite frankly, when game one, Nashville comes back, ties it up, you cannot give up that fourth goal. And in any Stanley Cup final, but let alone give up a goal like that in a tie close game late and expect to be a team of this caliber in the Pittsburgh Penguins. And then in game two, to give up that after a dominant first period late in the period to give up that goal. And then the second goal, JD mentioned the rebound control. I mean, it sounds like he's going to start tonight, but the mere fact that Laviolette didn't name his starter and kept it cryptic shows you how disappointed he's in. But I think he's the reason there. I mean, look at Matt Murray. I mean, those first two periods, he faced an onslaught, and he found a way. And Rene has not. And if he does start tonight, and I can tell you right now, he gives up a bad goal and it's 1-0, I wouldn't be surprised if Laviolette left both of them.
Jeff, what's your take on that?
No, I agree. And goaltending has been the major difference. Because Matt Murray, as he showed last year, and I really, really, really thought Matt Murray should have won the Conn Smythe Trophy last year, and if not him, Phil Kessel, instead of Sidney Crosby, even though Sid played very well. But I thought Matt Murray was just so outstanding. And though he wasn't the main guy, because I believe, I could be wrong, you guys can correct me here, because of the first few games of the playoffs, I was still depressed that the Kings didn't make the playoffs, so I missed some of those games because I was so angry at the world of hockey. But I know Theo Fleury was the main guy in this playoff run, and then he gave up a lot of goals in that one game in the conference final, and it's been Murray's team again. But Murray's been making that difference. He's stealing games from the Nashville Predators, where Pekka Rinne is giving up games to the Pittsburgh Penguins. So I totally agree with what Chris is saying.
You said Theo Fleury.
Did I say Theo Fleury? Oh, Marc-Andre Fleury. Marc-Andre Fleury.
I apologize.
Marc-Andre Fleury.
That's a nice throwback. I like it.
We're dating ourselves if
Yeah. Old guys. Yeah. I thought you were going to pull a reference to a Calgary Flames series or something. Maybe the 2004 Cup final against Tampa, right? And then tie in the Daryl Sutter technique there. I was waiting for this magical puzzle to fall in place on the Theo Fleury reference, and I feel like you didn't
I'll tell you exactly where that reference came from, Mark. I'll tell you exactly where that came from. The Kings traded for Jerome Iginla this year, which would have made me very happy if that was back in 2004, 2006, 2007. Because Jerome Iginla was one player I always wanted to play with the Kings, of course, in his prime. And when I used to play NHL hockey with my old PlayStation 2 back then, I always traded for Iginla. But way before that, in the 90s, when I played the original NHL hockey games on my Sega Genesis, I'm dating myself now for sure, Theo Fleury was a guy that I always wanted on the Kings. Because, he played for Team Canada just like Iginla, and that's when I could cheer for them. But I always wanted Fleury because I just loved the way he played, how feisty he was. So that's probably where it came from, or I just made it up to save face. Either way, it's pretty cool because Theo Fleury was one hell of a player.
Yeah, speaking of those old school games, when I think the 99 version, Miro Satan could fill the freaking net from Buffalo on those old games.
No matter
what I did, dude, I would trade for Miro Satan. That guy was a EA Sports superstar for whatever reason. I don't know what it was, but anyway, I digress.
I know this is off topic, but around that time, I'm going to have to say that also for me anyways, the biggest superstars in those games was Vladimir Siplikov and Vitaly Yakmanev, who were lights out on my NHL team with the LA Kings. In fantasy, of course, video game world, where in real life, not so much. But Siplikov and Yakhnamev were stunning, I have to say.
Man, funny with those late LA teams when we played those video games that the maybe you kept three or four players on the roster. And right?
I mean, trade everybody else.
Yeah, that's a throwback for sure. Anyway, Chris, what else have you got for Jeff?
Jeff, so what do you think of the fact that now that the series goes to Nashville starting tonight, the next two games? The Predators have been great in this postseason, as we all know, but they've been extra special at home. What odds do you give them in terms of getting the home cooking to get this series back level before going back to
Nashville? I think they have a great chance to take it at home because, you know, I'm going to give lots of props. And really, like, I've been doing it for a couple of years. Like, I've always been impressed with the Nashville fans or the Smashville fans. And they've obviously really embraced what the Predators have been doing this year. And maybe it's not a fair comparison. Maybe it is. But it really does – this run by Nashville really does remind me of the run the Kings did back in 1993 where, like, Southern California, L.A., if you guys remember how it was back then, it was just – like, everyone was hockey crazy, probably for the first time in the history of that franchise. And with Nashville – the fans have been coming and, you know, they want to support a team. They want to support a winner. They've been falling in love with hockey, much like with the Kings in 93. And after 93, of course, the Kings had some horrible teams, but a lot of the fans, something was built with that fan base. And I feel the same thing is going to happen with Nashville. They're going to come out. It's going to be electric. They're going to be screaming. Plus, you got PK Subban doing a Mark Messier-like prediction that Nashville's guaranteed going to win game three. The fans are going to go nuts, and how can that not inspire the Nashville players to step it up a notch, to be more opportunistic and trying and scoring in Matt Murray, or to play better defensively, or Rene to stop that puck if he does indeed play today. So Nashville, I think the odds are great. I actually think Nashville might pull one off today, but, you know, like I said before, anything can happen, especially in the Stanley Cup final, but they have a great chance because that crowd is going to be amazing. It's going to be electric.
Yeah, they were showing some of the...
Yeah, I feel like... Yeah, Mark.
Go ahead, Chris.
No,
they were showing some of the pregame... There we go. They were showing some of the pregame prep going on the NHL Network this morning, and it looks like at least the game entertainment staff is going to pull out all the stops. They got an Alan Jackson concert going before the game. I don't know logistically how that works, but I guess Mr. Jackson is going to come in and rile up the Nashville faithful. I mean, only in Nashville.
I love it, though, Mark. I love it.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
I love it. Doesn't it remind you of L.A. with our celebrities? You know, because one thing that I always thought was awesome is our celebrities coming to the games and supporting the Kings, especially in 2012, 2014. We got Will Ferrell buying, what is it, like in Times Square, one of those screens so he can troll New York Rangers fans by yelling "Go Kings, go!" at Times Square. Or we have Alyssa Milano, Matthew Perry, and all the regulars. You know, they have Nicole Kidman and her country singing husband. I don't know his name because I don't know country music. Carrie Underwood, obviously. Keith Urban, and obviously Carrie Underwood because she's married to Mike Fisher, but she's been showing her support. Kelly Clarkson, who I remember from, I think, the original American Idol. Now we're referencing everything today. She's out there, and I think it's great. I think they're coming out there, you know, and it helps. It brings the fans out. It gets them excited, and it makes them feel united. And that's definitely something we can relate as, me and you, Mark, as Kings fans, because there's also that celebrity connection. And there are celebrities who just show up because that's a fun thing to do. There are celebrities who just, it's something to do, that they do show up because they're all psyched about hockey, then they forget about the next year. But there's those hardcore celebrity fans that show up every year. The Alyssa Milanos, the Matthew Perrys, now the World Ferrells, Chloe Grace Moretz even, and become huge, Ronda Rousey, become huge fans. I like that Nashville has that. I think that even gives them an extra push where it's like, wow, we are united. The country singers, you know, the celebrities of Nashville are with us, and let's do it. I think it's great. I love stuff like that.
Well, Alan Jackson's one heck of a songwriter, that's for sure. Go ahead, Chris. Well, hold on. I wanted to mention one guy Jeff left out. One of my favorite fan images from Kingdom is Al Michaels pulling out his flip phone in 2012. It's like, come on, buddy. We know you can do better than the flip phone, sir. But he's been a season ticket holder for 25 years in L.A. Don't think Mr. Michaels is any sort of a bandwagon fan in L.A. That guy's been there through all of it.
Yeah, for sure. Definitely.
Go ahead, Chris.
the one thing I want to bring up, and it's kind of how I feel, like, I think for Nashville to win today, they gotta be ahead. Like, they have to play from in front. I feel like, I know they were in the first period of the night, but, I mean, after the first 10 minutes, they need to be up by a couple of goals, because I feel like if this is a close game, like JD mentioned about how opportunistic and basically they know how to win. And, you know, for the players, which the majority of the team was part of, you know, it's just basically roughly the same team as last year. I mean, it is going back from last spring. It's been a long grind. And I you know, as much, don't get me wrong, this team wants to win the Cup so bad. Who doesn't? But I'm not saying a close second, but not that far behind is not just winning the Cup, but then have this series over. So all these guys can go home and lie out in front of the pool for about a month and just kind of rest
the cottage.
The sun with their, as Mark likes to say, their beverage of choice, and have
beverage
nobody hit them. They want to get this done. I don't know how you guys feel about that, but if it's a close game, I got a feeling Pittsburgh's going to find a way to win it.
No, I agree, Chris. I think that Nashville is going to, it's not a serious, I'm going to go cliche here. It's not a series till a home team loses. So I think that Nashville's going to get it done at home, and we're going to end up with a best of three. But then when you look at that, how can you look at anybody and say they're going to beat the Penguins 4 out of 5 when Penguins have home ice in that? It's a long way to go. I wanted to get into this because JD talked about the faceoff dot and a couple other matchup situations. And now that LaViolette has home ice in Nashville, what kind of changes do you expect to see matchup wise? Do you think they will keep Subban pretty much tailing Malkin? Are there any faceoff matchups that you think are going to flip, as you mentioned, JD, that where they kind of got a hold of the dot there in game two, now that they come home and they get choice? Do you see anything from LaViolette that he can pull strings and get a win out of this club?
I'm going to be honest with you, Mark. I'm not 100% sure what LaViolette's going to do or what he's going to change, because I haven't been watching that deeply where I'm actually thinking about like what Nashville can do to change besides Rene actually making some saves and not giving up those rebounds. But you know what? Nashville did improve in the second game in the faceoff dot. And if I remember correctly, it was like 57% in game one. That's a huge change because they were smoked by Pittsburgh in the dot circle. So it actually was working in Nashville's favor in game two. And if LaViolette decides to switch somebody or change things or whatever, it could affect the progress that they did actually make in the second game. So I don't know. So 100%, I'm not sure, but I love to hear what Chris says about that. I know Chris would have a better answer than I did right there.
Yeah, I what I noticed is in the first couple of games is whenever the third pairing of the Nashville D got out there, Mike Sullivan put out, you know, the Crosby unit, and that was some scary moment. So I think you got to really focus on that D pair in terms of trying to neutralize, if you will, or contain as much as possible that those high-powered Pittsburgh line.
All right, well, since JD is the NHL content director for Cali Sports News and obviously covers the Kings as a Kings fan, Chris has a couple Kings questions for you before we got to let you go, JD.
All right.
So JD, you know, they made one very good move, assigning Tanner Pearson to a 4-year deal last month. You know, they have to sign Tyler Toffoli, who was an restricted free agent. Obviously, we have the expansion draft. You know, I'd be curious if you have a feel on who the Kings are going to lose. But what does this new regime offseason look like to you? And they have the 11th pick in the draft as well. So how do you see this offseason for the Kings?
Well, here's the thing, Chris. It's a brave new world right now for the Los Angeles Kings. And that's because after 11 years of being, you know, having Dean Lombardi in that administration, and, you know, after so many years, you get a feel, and I know, Mark, you guys both agree with me, you get a feel of what a certain GM likes to look for. So we knew what Lombardi liked to look for, whether it's for the entry draft, whether it's for free agents or et cetera, whatever the case may be. But even though Rob Blake, Mike Fuda, and Luke Robitaille have already been with the organization for years in different capacities, Robitaille and Blake, obviously LA King legend players, But it was Lombardi as the GM, and especially with Daryl Sutter as the coach, who also liked certain type of players, we kind of knew what was going to happen. That's all out the window now. That's completely out the window because we don't even know what type of player Rob Blake is really going to look for when it comes to the entry draft. When it comes to the expansion draft and who they're going to protect, I know before I predicted that maybe Jake Muzzin was going to be left exposed, and I still believe right now that it depends on who George McPhee in Vegas, who they pick from the LA Kings, is going to determine whether Muzzin or Alec Martinez become expendable as trade bait so the Kings can try to get more offense, but it depends on who they take, who Vegas takes, and therefore how many free cap space the Kings can develop. But when it comes to the expansion draft, from what I've been hearing, it's going to be four forwards, four defensemen, and obviously one goalie, which will be Jonathan Quick, that the Kings are going to be saving. And it's going to be Kopitar, who has that no movement clause anyways, but that's a natural. It's going to be Jeff Carter. It's going to be Tanner Pearson, as you mentioned, just recently signed. And it's going to be RFA Tyler Toffoli, who the Kings are in hopes of re-signing, but that, from what I'm hearing, they're not close yet because Toffoli already had his bridge year contract at 3.25 that just ended, and yes, did not have a very good year, but did have a career year the year before that and is looking to get a raise. And the Kings, everything is up in the air, and for the Kings to know what roster they're going to have this upcoming season, it's, you need some type of domino effect, and it all starts with what they can sign, if they can sign Tyler Toffoli to a cap-friendly contract, and then it depends on who Vegas takes. So that's the four forwards. The 4D is going to be Doughty, obviously, Martinez, Muzzin, and I'm hearing Derek Forbert. Kevin Gravel is protected. He's not allowed to be exposed. Same with Paul Ledoux. Same with forwards, Adrian Kempe, and I believe also Brzezinski. But Braden McNabb is going to be exposed. He's cheap at 1.7. He's only 26. He's a big guy. Might be someone George McPhee might be interested in if he decides to go in the defensive route. But who the Kings probably are going to lose, if it's not McNabb, which might be enticing, then it's going to be someone like a Trevor Lewis or a Nick Dowd, who are cheap, but can't, you know, but Trevor Lewis plays 100% with his heart on his sleeve. He wishes he had the skill of a Jaromir Jagr. He plays like he wants to have the skill of a Jaromir Jagr. He just doesn't have the skill set of a Jaromir Jagr. But damn it, you can't blame him for trying. And with his experience, and he is someone that kids listen to, that people listen to, he is a leader, would be a great pick by Vegas. And I don't think, as we talked about a million times on this show, the Kings would rather have Vegas take a Marion Gabrick or a Dustin Brown, where they can get a big cap, disappearance off their cap that would help the Kings then decide who they can look at free agency. But Chris, this is a very complex question to answer because it depends on what Vegas is going to do, and then it depends on what Toffoli will accept, which then defense, and we don't even know what type of players Rob Blake and Fuda are going to look for when it comes to the draft. And when it comes to the upcoming draft, like a type of guy that Dean Lombardi would look at would be like defenseman Nicholas Hague, who's a defenseman who's 6'6" and 212 pounds and was just went to the OHL final, the J. Ross Robertson final, with two other LA King prospects already in that team, Spencer Watson and defenseman Jacob Moverari. Used to be Moverare, but he's pulling a Sekera thing on us right now. So now it's Moverari as of today. But I'm also hearing they might be linked with Owen Tippett, who's a right wing, who's 6 feet, had an amazing playoffs with Mississauga as well. But I'm also hearing it could be Eli Tolvanen. I'm very bad with pronunciations. He can play left wing, and you know the Kings are always looking for left wingers, but he's not that tall. But who knows? We won't know what Rob Blake's going to be looking for because we don't have a feel what he's interested in. But it's a brave new world. It's confusing, but we'll have a better picture once the expansion draft and the entry draft are done. And if they can find DeFoley, then we'll know if the Kings can't even make a big move in free agency or trade Muzzin or Martinez for a more offensive player to help the top six score more goals, or even the bottom six score more goals, like Denon and Brian Boyle, hint, hint. So I don't know if that answers your question, but it's just right now so many questions and so little answers. We need the Donovan effect to start, and it all starts with that expansion draft.
My last question for you, JP, is if, you know, I've said this to Mark, and my feeling is the Kings are cap strapped. They have a depth problem on the NHL roster, and they do not have a good prospect pipeline. So given that, what would make sense to me is, do you think it's possible a Muzzin or a Martinez, or in the right situation, even a Toffoli, is traded for a 3-for-1 kind of deal, get youth, young players who can help them now, help them with that cap, help them with that depth, and maybe give them more upside? Is that a possibility?
What I'm hearing from my sources, which, again, you know, can be completely wrong, because we won't know if it's true until it actually happens. We'll see it if we believe it. And that is a possibility, Chris. But what I'm hearing is like, okay, if Vegas, say, takes Trevor Lewis, that's only $2 million off the cap. Okay, that's not much. And the Kings are cap-strapped. And I don't think we even know really if the cap is going to go up or even go down. I think it depends on the players and what they vote when it comes to the escrow, blah, 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 technicalities. So if the cap does go down, that's even going to hurt the Kings even more. And if the cap does go up, I don't even think it's going up that much. It still hurts the Kings either way because they're so cap strapped. But if, for example, they can use a Jake Muzzin, for example, who makes $4 million a year. That's $4 million they can take off, and say they throw in, I don't know, man. I don't want to say, I'm not going to say Adrian Kempe because I would lose my mind if that actually happened. But I just example, don't freak out, people. But just as an example, if they can throw in somebody else in that trade, then they can, what I'm hearing, they're still looking at guys, even though now it's Rob Blake and Al Lombardi, they're still looking at guys like a Matt Duchene from Colorado, who's $6 million a year, or a Gabriel Landeskog, who's, I think, at 5-point-something. They just need to create that space. So I think they're looking for more guys like that. They're looking for guys that are going to make an immediate backup. An immediate difference offensively right away, where it seems to be the new game plan of the LA Kings administration is more goals. Even though John Stevens said they're still going to be focusing on the defensive end, but with the young guys already on the team, like Paul Ledoux, Forbert, who I believe will be protected in the draft, and as well as Kevin Gravel, that just like in 2012, when Doughty, Voinov, and Martinez showed that they could play at the NHL level, Jack Johnson became expendable. So yeah, I do actually do believe that Muzzin or Martinez are going to be shipped out, but it's going to be, I don't know if it's going to be for depth, because I can't call that because we don't know what type of GM Rob Blake is going to be. But from what I'm hearing, they're just looking for an immediate impact because they still believe that this core could win the Stanley Cup. They still believe that that window of opportunity is still realistic. So they're looking for guys, not old, who were great, like a Le Cavalier, like a Jerome McGinley, but guys that are in their prime right now that can make an immediate difference. I'm hearing still Matt Duchene or Gabriel Landeskog. We'll see, but that's what I'm hearing.
Well, there was some news out of the LA Kings camp this week, and we're talking with JD Stiles from Cali Sports News here on the Vegas Hockey Podcast. And it's always our pleasure to board. There was an assistant coach, and as much as it pains me to say it, Bob Miller's replacement was brought on board. What can you tell us about those two deals?
I don't know much about Alex Faust, and that's the guy who is the new play-by-play guy replacing Bob Miller. What's that?
There's no replacing Bob Miller. There's just taking over.
Exactly. The torch has been passed to Alex Faust, but never can you replace a legendary Hall of Fame play-by-play commentator, broadcaster like Bob Miller, who worked for 44 years and is already in the Hall of Fame. But this is our new guy for the Kings, Alex Faust. I actually don't know much about him, except for what LA Kings insider John Rosen explained, as he's very warm, So he, a warmth comes across on screen when listening to his voice, whatever that means. And he, right. he brings excitement to the game with his voice, where it's like, okay, sure, cool, I guess that's good. I actually didn't mind the guy who did most of the play-by-play last year, but his name is escaping me right now. I believe he used to be the play-by-play guy for the Dallas Stars. And even though no one's gonna replace Bob Miller, like in the way that actually replacing Bob Miller, as in being as great as he was or even better. Come on, he's a legend. How did the Kings replace Gretzky once they traded him to St. Louis?
No, you don't.
You know, like we're talking about Hall of Famers here. But he's a young guy. He seems to be very, very energetic. So for what I'm hearing, so we'll see. The important thing for me is, number one, getting used to not having Bob Miller there with Jim Fox. And sadly, we have been kind of been getting used to it a little bit because Miller, with his medical issues, was gone for long periods of time last year and the year before that. So we got a little taste of the difference of not having Bob there. We just have to get used to this guy. But one of the most important things, number one, is the chemistry he can have with Foxy, with Jim Fox. I think Jim Fox is absolutely amazing as the color commentator. And him and Bob were like Gretzky and Curry. You know, just they were just amazing. They had amazing chemistry together and worked together for over 20 years, and obviously they were fantastic together. So I would like to see if that chemistry is there. If it is, I'm gonna give this guy a chance. I'm gonna, you know, he's our guy, I'm gonna listen to him. But he has huge shoes to fill. Now when it comes to Dave Lowry, when I think of Dave Lowry, who's now the assistant coach of the LA Kings, the first thing that came to my mind was that Stanley Cup final run by the Florida Panthers in 1996. And then I started thinking of those stupid rubber rats that the fans would throw on the ice, which would delay the game every time Florida scored a goal. And I picture Patrick Roy in net with Colorado in the final, not hiding in the net like everyone else, but standing out there, daring them to hit him with those stupid plastic rats, which they did try to do.
I love the rats.
But Dave Lowry was...
I love the rats.
Dave Lowry had an amazing playoffs. I remember him being with Ted Lindsay. Scott Mellenby was on that team, Tom Fitzgerald, Stu Barnes. And I just remember they just had a run to remember until, sadly, you know, they got blown out, but they got swept in four games. The fourth game, they did lose in overtime. But that's really what I remember about Dave Lowry. Overall, I don't remember much of him as a player. As a coach, I honestly have not been following his career. So, but I'll give him a chance. You know, the thing is, we haven't really talked about with me anyways on the show about John Stevens becoming the head coach. At least I don't think we've talked about it. I am happy, but I'm still skeptical about John Stevens. In one way, I think of the Who's classic song, Bob O'Reilly, you know.
Same as the old boss.
Yeah, same boss. New boss, same boss. Yeah, right? But in the end, he's totally different personality than like Daryl Sutter was. And of course, he Sutter was the boss, and he was doing what Sutter needed as a part of that coaching unit. Now Stevens is the boss, and he has NHL experience. I know he was the head coach of the Philadelphia Flyers and everything like that. And so he's been there before, so we'll give him the benefit of the doubt as well. And if he thinks Dave Lowry is going to be his right-hand man, it's going to be perfect as his right-hand man over Davis Payne, who they let go, sure, that's great. I'll give him a chance. But just like with John Stevens as a new head coach of the Kings, I'm skeptical, but I'll be open to see what they can provide with the Kings. And if Lowry and Stevens truly can open up the Kings offensively, depending on who the Kings can also bring in, and Kopitar has to freaking rebound this year, stop having kids, stop getting married, even though you should if it makes you happy in life. But damn it, Kopitar, it affects your play every time a major personal great event happens to you in your real life, you have a terrible year. And we can't blame it on injuries. So we need Kopitar to bounce back. And you know what? I think Lowry might be okay. Maybe. Time will tell.
Yeah, tough. There's a lot of moving parts in LA this offseason. To your point where they still believe that their core can win a Stanley Cup, I certainly think that, let's say, Carter, Kopitar, Doughty, Quick, if you call that the core, and
then to a lesser extent, bring Pearson, Toffoli, Martinez, and Muzzin into the second depth of core on the team, if you will. Those parts, I think I agree that is a nice nucleus for a championship team. You do have two all-star centers, an all-world defenseman, and an all-world goaltender. That's nice parts. That's nice pieces to begin with. But it's very difficult with what the cap is and some of the stuff that Dean Lombardi left behind to fill in as well as Pittsburgh has behind Crosby, Malkin, Kessel, Letang, who isn't with us, and then for them to have the luxury of Fleury and Murray. Is that the McFlurry in net?
I love it. They should win Conn Smythe together if Pittsburgh wins the cup, I think. Let's split the Conn Smythe for the first time ever. Give it to Theo Fleury. Let's split it three ways. Marc-Andre Fleury, Theo Fleury, and Matt Murray if Pittsburgh wins the Stanley Cup. Triple McFlurry.
Yeah. There you go. But I don't – you know, a lot of that depth on the Pittsburgh Penguins is the homegrown variety. And like Chris mentioned earlier, there's role players in the pipeline. I think Kempe should be first line left wing and leave him there. I don't know Steven's coaching philosophy enough to know whether he's a set lines kind of a guy or whether, like Sutter, he liked to keep his two guys together and just move the third guy out of in and out and in and out and in and out and in and out frequently. But why not just leave Kopitar, Kempe, and Gaborik on the first line and see what you get for, let's say, 25 games, not 25 minutes. Put that unit together on the ice and leave the 70s unit together on the ice. Toffoli's going to get paid. Toffoli's going to get back. And then, you know, when you get into the depth of that roster, that's where the Nick Shores, the Nick Dowds, the Andy Andreas, that's where it starts to fall off dramatically. And I don't see that in other cup teams in Chicago and Pittsburgh where there's that much of a fall off. So I think it's going to be real tough for the Kings to generate that in one off season. But I think those first two lines and you just have to roll with them. That's who you got. You can't, I don't think you can play the Gaborik is only getting a goal every 8-9 games, put him on the fourth line and think that helps anything. You know what I mean? And right. And then when you bring up in days of old, when you bring Dwight King up to that first line to replace him, then you know you have a depth issue and you're not improving that first line production by bringing Dwight King up. You're punishing Gaborik for apparent disinterest, lackadaisical play, what have you. But I mean, offensively, we know is the struggle. And for me anyway, I'd like to see those top six players be the top six. Leave it alone. Let the chemistry happen with the young, because I think he is the 30 goal scorer waiting to happen. And if Gaborik can get in there and get some garbage, some rebounds off of the shots, then I think he can still hit a 20 goal plateau if he's in that position consistently. Then your third line, if you go Lewis Brown, pick your poison at the off wing there. It's a struggle for sure. It's a struggle for sure. I think that's going to wrap it up. Dana's going to be joining us here in a couple minutes, JD, so I'm going to have to let you go, though, sir. I appreciate you taking the time on Saturday pregame with us a little bit here on the Vegas Hockey Podcast. You know you're always welcome, sir. We appreciate every time you come on, and you've always been a good friend of the show, sir. So thank you again as we head into the off season. We'll be in touch over the summer, breaking down whatever the Kings did stuff like that. So have a good summer, sir. We will be in touch, and thank you for your contributions this year. Always a pleasure to have you on the show, sir.
Well, no, thank you guys, Mark and Chris, for bringing me back on the show. You guys know, just give me the call. As long as I don't have work or, you know, a nice trip planned with the wife, as what happened last week. If people don't know, I was asked to be on the show last week and I couldn't do it because I wasn't in town. But normally, you know, I love coming on the Vegas Hockey Podcast and talking any hockey with you guys, especially LA Kings hockey, but any hockey. It's always an honor and a pleasure, guys. Thank you so much. Fun as always. And I'll talk to you again this summer.
Okay, thank you,
JD,
sir.
JD, real quick, watch for Michael
yep.
Rasmussen if he's on the board with the 11th pick for the King.
Okay. Breaking
okay.
news.
Okay, I've heard – I've seen so many different mock drafts where besides, you know, the top two, you know, Nolan Patrick and Nico, I can never pronounce his last name, but he plays for Halifax. How do you say that? Hishier? Like, you know, besides those two – Hishier, okay. So besides those two, pretty much B and D top two. Now, whether which one goes number one, who jersey picks number one has been up for debate. But I've seen so many different mock drafts where yeah. once you get past 3-4, it's like players are all over the place. And I've been hearing Rasmussen actually with Vegas. I've heard that of Vegas. George McPhee might be interested in him. I have not heard him linked with the Kings yet, but there's so many mock drafts out there and so many, you know, ways you can go with the draft with your prediction. You can make a billion different ways and it probably still won't end up being yeah. that. But you know, 6.5 centerman, I would love if the Kings picked a guy that big, 200 pounds, to be with the Kings. I would not be against it if that is who the Kings pick with the 11th spot. But if they do or not, you know, like I would say, time will tell. But if that is true of the Kings, if that's who Rob Blake picks, I think I'd be happy with that. It'd be nice to get big down the middle again with the Kings.
I like the Golden Knights angle there just because center is going to be one of the hardest positions for them to fill to start with. And to get a guy that size, I'm still doing some analysis on it, but to pull a number one center, you know, a franchise number one out of this is going to be tough, but I think he could end up a very solid number two center. Like you say, big guy. I like that Golden Knights fit because really, what are you going to do with him in LA? You're going to stick him in Ontario for a few years and bury him behind Kopitar and Carter,
probably
take the defenseman.
Obviously, yes.
Take the defenseman. Yeah, right. I mean, take the defenseman. Take the winger, which is where, you know, I think Nick Dowd can be a serviceable third liner if he continues to. And I have seen improvement in his faceoff play, and his two way game. I think he can be a serviceable third liner for that club. I think you could put Trevor Lewis.
And has chemistry with Dustin Brown, by the way. And
for
has
sure,
chemistry
sure.
when played with Dustin Brown, which that's a big up.
I agree. So I don't know if they go with the center at that spot. I think he's probably going to be off the board by then. But you know whose stock has been rising and rising? And Cody Glass has been jumping up everybody's draft board for whatever reason. And
that's the guy I think is who Vegas is going to take.
If he's on the board – I've seen him go, and we're going to do our mock draft here shortly, but I've seen him go as high as 3 in some mock drafts. It'll be interesting.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting either way. JD, again, thank you so much for taking the time. You can follow JD on Twitter at JD Styles, STYLZ_. Go to CaliSportsNews.com. Check out all their NHL content. JD's their NHL content editor over there. And all of his stuff is linked through his Twitter account. And don't forget, next season, turn into the Kings Road Talk podcast that JD is a frequent host on that show. So, sir, have a great summer. It's been great talking with you, and we'll talk to you down the road.
All right. Thanks, guys. Go Kings go next year.
Thanks, JD.
All right, and now let me bring in our weekly – I'm going to say co-host now. This is such a frequent trip down the Vegas lane. I'm just going to promote you. We're going to double your existing salary, sir, and we're going to just call you Dana Lane, co-host of the Vegas Hockey Podcast, UNLV Rebel Hockey play-by-play guy, sports handicapper with SBR Sports, all of the things locally that Dana does for hockey. It's our pleasure to have you on the show once again. How are you today, Dana?
I only heard one word, salary.
Yeah, we're going to double it, sir.
Oh, geez. Thank you. There'll be two F's free. That's fantastic.
Absolutely. How do you beat that?
I'm looking for the opportunity, and because of the promotion, I'll have to up my game.
Your game is strong, sir. The game is strong with this one, Chris. So, hey, man, we got a second player.
Absolutely.
We got a second player with the Golden Knights before we jump into the cup finals, and I want to get into some numbers on tonight's game and the rest of the series. But talk a little bit about Thomas Hyka. What have you seen? What have you heard?
Oh, well, I mean, obviously it's another guy that has not hit the ice in the National Hockey League. And, you know, let's be honest. I mean, if this is a year from now, we're not really even, you know, talking about this move. But, of course, with every move that the Vegas Knights get in anticipation of building the roster, we're very excited about it. I know he's a young kid. From what all the reports that I read, he's got pretty good speed. He's got some offensive skills. He's got pretty good hands. But, again, how does that translate into the National Hockey League? Or probably more likely, how does that translate into the American Hockey League? And I guess we'll see. You know, what's going to be exciting is a lot of these guys that, you know, we have never seen on the NHL ice surface, we'll get to see at the evaluation camp in August. So that's right. Kind of what I'm really excited to see is, you know, okay, now you're on the smaller surface. Now you're going up against guys that are, you know, as good as you or at least the same.
Better.
And let's see how you can perform at that point.
Yeah, for sure. And then Chris alluded earlier in the show about the George coming out earlier this week and saying that by middle of next week, he should be in a position where he can announce some deals. Probably has to wait till the season to be over for, you know, whatever tampering rules that may be in place or whatever. But are you hearing anything? We did get a rumor that there's some talk between Chicago and George McPhee regarding Trevor Van Riemsdyk and kind of working out some kind of a deal where Marcus Krueger has to be included in that package. Are you hearing anything like that coming through your sources, sir?
Well, there's a couple of things. I mean, of course, Chicago was the big heavy rumor earlier. But of course, I think to me, I mean, you're in more of a situation with Anaheim where, you know, they got to make a choice on what they're going to do with Silverberg. I mean, you can't move Perry or Getzlaff or Kessler, and you can't move Bieksa. They all have no movements. And of course, you're going to protect. You're probably going to go 8-1-1 on this, so you're going to protect Raquel and Landholm and Botnan and probably Fowler. So, you know, the odd man out here is Silverberg, and I'm certain that, you know, he would have been the next protected player if they had another one available, and I'm sure that they don't want to lose him, especially after a pretty solid postseason. So, you know, you might have a deal with them. But as far as Chicago is concerned, I mean, you know, look, I guess it would be between Van Riemsdyk and Krueger. I might just sit there and say, you know what, we're going to bring a lot of goaltenders in, so we're going to go ahead and take Jeff Glass, and you can do whatever you want with Van Riemsdyk and Marcus Krueger. There was a rumor, though, not a rumor. I don't want to say things as a rumor, but there is a fact that Marc-Andre Fleury's wife was in town recently to look at schools and to look at potential homes. So that is an absolute
get
fact. And
get
so
out
that
of here.
Is that's very interesting. And of course, he has not waived his no movement clause yet, but that is something that has to be done here pretty soon.
Well, I will say I've heard you pumping the tires on Fleury for, I'm going to say, a good solid 3 months. I've heard some of your discussions with Brian on that topic. you guys get pretty warm on that. Yeah, your position is a little warm. Your position's always been that if you could show you another Stanley Cup winning goaltender, if he moves his no wave clause that is available to be taken, you'd sure be willing to listen. But as of now, that's the only guy that is going to be out there for the taking. And why not start the franchise with a goalie like Marc-Andre Fleury?
Well, listen, man, here's the thing about Marc-Andre Fleury. Aside from all of that, aside from the rings and, you know, what he's done with the Pittsburgh Penguins, he's everything that George McPhee says he wants in a player. He's fantastic Correct. In the locker room. He's a guy that, you know, you can build around, that you want your young locker room to be around. He's a character guy. He's a family man. He's got, you know, two kids. Everything you ever could want, Mark is. And Matt Murray's come onto the scene and been fantastic, but this is a goaltender that's over 150 games over 500 in his National Hockey League career. I'm pretty good with Mark coming in and being the number one guy here. So if that happens, fantastic. Of course, and with that being said as well, I don't see Mark as a guy that says, well, I'm not waving my no movement because, you know, I'm going to stay here in Pittsburgh and put you in a bad spot and know that you're going to have to either make a deal or get rid of Matt Murray, which just someday, you know, on paper, it says it could happen. But the reality is that just doesn't seem like something. They're going to do everything they can to keep Matt Murray. So I think he waves his no movement with knowing that, it's likely he's going to Vegas. I don't know how many dance partners there are for a deal. I know Calgary was in the discussion for that. And as far as I'm concerned, that's probably the team that's in the forefront for making a deal. But from everything I hear, Mark would be, you know, more than happy to come. And if his wife is here, checking and scoping out the scene, then that's interesting. He's making preparations to do so.
I had not heard that, so that's really interesting. Happy wife, happy life, right? If you can't get the woman on board, you might as well forget about it. I'm speaking from 28 years of marriage experience. Happy wife, happy life. So that's an interesting tidbit there. Let me bring in Chris. He hasn't had a chance to jump in here yet. I know we want to get into these Stanley Cup finals with you for a little bit before we got to run, Chris.
Hey, Dana. Great to have you back.
Hey, Chris.
I got two questions for you on Nashville. So give me the biggest reason why you think that this series is going to go back to Pittsburgh all even at 2 games apiece.
Well, I wish you would ask me that question after the game 3, and then I could give you more of a reason. But I'm not sure, Chris, if I feel that way. But I'll just look. Here's the thing: this is the simplest form that I could bring this down to when looking at this series. It is Nashville has to beat the defending champions 4 out of the next 5 games to win the cup. They have to beat a team that basically put 3 lines out there, not basically, they put 3 lines out there, or 4 lines out there, really, that could put the puck in the back of the net. And they're doing the same thing to Nashville that they did to San Jose last year. They're overwhelming them with talent, which is crazy considering the amount of injuries that the Penguins have had. But we see, here's the difference between these two teams. We see a Letang go down. Well, what does Mike Sullivan do? Just makes a few adjustments, adds a minute or so to people's playing time, you know, gets a little bit more production out of some guys that, you know, may not have as many minutes during the course of the year. But then on the flip side of that, you know, we look at a Ryan Johansson going down and the effect that it's had on Arvidsson, the effect that it's had on the rest of his line, even, you know, Arvidsson's like a -5 since he's went down, and his line has had one assist since his injury. That's the difference between these two teams. So to say, well, how does Nashville go back 2-2? Well, I'll tell you what, the first period is the biggest period. But honestly, of the Pittsburgh has to be feeling good because of the six periods that they have played, the sixth one for the Penguins was their best. And I think Pittsburgh is going to get ready to roll. And if we come out of this after four games with a sweep, I'm not surprised.
Well, my second question was, what is your biggest worry for Nashville? Is it Pekka-Rinne?
Oh, it has to be. I mean, it has to be Pekka-Rinne. But I also, my biggest worry is, again, going back to that Arvidsson line. I mean, it's just, I don't think they're the same. I don't, you know, this is, we say this all the time, that the depth is what wins Stanley Cups. Well, it's real easy to see which team has the depth, and it's also real easy to see which goaltender is fresher, if you will, because of Matt Murray's injury. You know, for me, it's got to be Pekka-Rinne. To me, Nashville, they can sit there and say, that locker room has to say, look, we've outshot them. We've controlled the puck, 63% of the time in this series. That's a fact. We have held them in check on the power play, and we're still down 2-0 in this series. Now, what do we have left? That's what I mean. Nobody's going to say that, but honestly, the gap between Pittsburgh getting better and where they've been is far greater than what Nashville's gap is. Now, I think Nashville's played their best hockey, and they're still down 2-0.
And Chris alluded to that earlier. We're talking with Dana Lane on the Vegas Hockey Podcast, where you could, it'd be pretty easy to make the argument that for large portions of the series so far, the Predators have been the better team on the ice. And the experience factor for Pittsburgh to stay patient, play their game, and, you know, capitalize on their opportunities. I mean, they went the second period and a large portion of the third period without shots in one of the games, still put five on the board, gave up a 3-0 lead and didn't matter at all. They scored in the last two times in the last 2 minutes. When your goals against average is five and you've been the better team for large portions of the series, it doesn't bode well for you. And I said Nashville in six, and I'm not jumping off of that. I'm gonna go down with the ship, but I said the same thing you said earlier, Dana. No matter what, it's not a series until the home team loses. But when you break it down to four out of five against Pittsburgh, when two of the last three are going to be in Pittsburgh, that's a really tall task to ask of a team making its first run this deep into the playoffs. What are the numbers for tonight's game, sir?
Well, Nashville is a favorite, and I will just follow that up by saying that, if I'm Nashville, I go out and find all the catfish I can and perhaps get Garth Brooks to sing the national anthem. But the number tonight is Pittsburgh's at +$1.17. Nashville's a slight favorite, as they would be at home. The under is shaded to it's shaded to the under 5.5, -$1.35. So that's where I'm at tonight. I'm on Pittsburgh at +$1.17. There are $1.20s out there if you shop a little bit, but $1.17-ish is kind of the predominant number. And then under 5.5, -$1.35.
So the Saturday
over.
Okay. It's been an over series so far. That's for sure.
Game two went under.
Was that the under?
Yeah, was game it two six? Went under the 5.5. No, it was 5.5. Did they end up at 5 in the second game? Yeah, 4-1. Yeah,
4-1. Yeah.
Okay, I'm sorry. I thought they hit 5 in the second game too. Late, maybe not. I'm off my rocker here for a second.
That's okay.
I'm off my rocker.
They had a cold wave. They had a cold wave. Remember, Mark?
They did. Yes, sir. They did. That's right.
That's when you turned the television off.
Yeah, right. It just seems to me. Chris said it earlier. They got to play from ahead tonight. They got to, and he also said that if Pekka gives up a softy or gives one up in the first 10 minutes, your odds on the sweep. That first 10 minutes could give me the odds on a sweep to take it at that point in time, regardless of how well Nashville's been playing. I don't know. There's not much.
Yeah, break they have to be up 2-0 after the first 10 minutes. Even if they're up 1-0, Dana, I think Pittsburgh is going to find a way to win this game.
Yeah, and that's real interesting too, because I think if I'm Peter Laviolette, I mean, I ride Pekka Rinne no matter what. I mean, there's no way that you bring in a Saros who is 5'11" and he just does not give you, if I'm Pittsburgh, I'm not looking at Saros thinking I can't beat this guy either. And, it's funny that Laviolette likes to play those games during the week from not naming his goaltender. I don't know what that accomplishes. I guess that's a team-wide thing that they've done all year long with everybody on the team. But, you have to ride Pekka Rinne. There is no and honestly, even if they lose this game, I don't think you go to Saros at all. I think you go down with a goaltender who brought you, and I don't think Pittsburgh cares if it's Pekka Rinne or Saros. I think they're pretty confident that they're going to be able to put some pucks in the net and be opportunistic. This is not even – I mean, look, this is a Penguins team that averaged, 33 shots a game during the regular season. They have there's so much more potential for them to play better than they have. And I just don't.
Yeah, there is.
That first period tonight, I'm telling you, even if it's even, tied, I think Nashville goes in that locker room and just goes, what do we got to do? There's nothing.
I think they're
else
already there. I think they're
they
already there,
be.
Dane.
The only thing is Bridgestone Arena. That's the only thing. That's the only bind of hope for Nashville. If they get out and get out to a 2-0 lead, then I think that the series changes. But if it's tied, and even like you said, even if it's 1-0 and it's say Pittsburgh is out shooting them, I still think Pittsburgh is in great shape, and I think they'll feel good about it. And not only that, Pittsburgh, listen, first of all, even if Nashville wins this game, Pittsburgh is going to say, okay, well, game one at home. Now we're comfortable playing in this environment. There's not going to be any surprises in game four. And I think even if they split these two, Pittsburgh is going to win this cup. By the way, I've been saying that for 3.5 months.
No, that was going to be the next phrase out of my mouth, is you've been riding Pittsburgh since about January. And you've said it here before, there's no reason for you to come off of that pick. But we've all seen these playoff series go like this. You get the first two games at home, you go on the road, the previously visiting team gets the boost, takes game three, game four turns into the pivotal game of the series. Pittsburgh's going to win that in overtime, go home and win it in game five. That's, we've seen these types of playoff series go that exact same pattern time and time again. And it's going to be tough for us to change that pattern in this. We are just about out of time. Chris, do you have anything else for Dana today?
I guess, when Dana made his pick, not that I didn't think he was going to be, wrong or anything. The only thing that was holding me back was the Letang factor. And it is amazing to me, guys, that this team went out their number one defenseman who plays 30 minutes a night. This is
for
not
sure.
A team like if this is not like Nashville, if they lost Subban, they would still have, Ellis and all those other, they're kind of doing it. I don't want to say that with the no name defense, but it is amazing to me that they really haven't skipped the beat, losing a player of that magnitude on the blue line. I don't know how many teams else in the NHL could do that, given the structure of the Penguins have.
Yeah, I just also wanted to add, too, and of course, that just goes in, with the depth factor. And I think that, Mike Sullivan, he deserves a lot of credit. Here's a guy that really hasn't experienced losing at all at this level. In fact, he just comes in and wins cups apparently. But, you know, I think you've got to give guys, you know, Ian Cole has, you know, he was pretty good last game. I think you got to give him some credit. His with Justin Schultz and Ole Mata is probably not your ideal defenseman, but I think these guys have elevated their game just enough to be effective. Plus, on top of that, the forwards have come back and given them a little help. I mean, they're not looking for that stretch pass up the middle that they're used to doing, and I think they just made a little bit of adjustment, gave everybody just a little bit more responsibility. And this is, look, this is an organization that continuously drafts lower, you know, in the entry draft. And you know, you talk about, here's the difference between what Washington does and what Pittsburgh does. And even though Pittsburgh has a ton of superstars, which one of those teams are a team? When I look at Washington, I look at Ovechkin. There is no, like you could say probably Kuznetsov or whatever you want to say, but really it's Ovechkin. It's not a team, it's Ovechkin's team. And I think that's the difference between the two. And honestly, and I think Barry Trotz will probably tell you the same thing, I think he'd be happier if Ovechkin wasn't there. I think they'd be a better team without Ovechkin. And that's not to say Ovechkin isn't a great player. I just think there's too much emphasis on the individual rather than the team.
Interesting point. Well, we're going to leave it at that, Dana.
Cody Glass, our good friend Steve Karp, talked to Cody Glass this morning because we've both been on him, you know, since the Golden Knights, it was announced they would pick six. And Cody Glass told Steve Karp today that he would be honored to play for the Vegas Golden Knights. That's a great response.
Of course he would. Yeah, no, you're right. I said he was actually rising up.
If he's on the board when we do our mock draft, and you know who's picking for Vegas,
that's right.
Little teaser.
Yep. No, he's been rising up a lot of people.
In terms of our show, in 2 weeks, our draft show, mock draft show.
Yep.
I disagree with that. I want to see. I wish we could see these kids' results at the combine in real time, but I guess they don't announce those until after, but very interested to see how he does, although I don't put too much stock in it because none of this has anything to do with hockey sense or doing anything on the ice.
Right. Well, I'd be interested if Rasmussen is there and Glass, who they end up going with. It'll be an interesting pick for sure. Anyway, we got to run. I'm out of time, and I got to get on the road here in about 10 minutes. So, Dana, once again, sir, we will talk to you next week. Thank you again for taking your Saturday. Dana's on Pittsburgh plus the 117. For anybody following the Saturday night special, he's been lights out this season. Also looking at the under tonight for a good play as well. Catch Dana weekdays, Monday through Friday from 1 to 2 on 1400 AM radio here in Las Vegas for all of your Golden Knights needs, co-hosting with Brian Blessing. Thank you, sir, once again. And I know you'll be watching the game tonight. I'll follow you on Twitter, and we'll see how it goes.
Yes, sir. Well, I appreciate you guys having me on as usual. And in about 3 weeks, we'll have a full team.
Absolutely. And don't spend all that raise in one place, sir.
Well, I'll have to go and get Golden Knights Sock Monkeys. That's my next purchase.
There you go. There you go. All right, buddy. We'll talk to you next week.
All right. I'll see you guys.
All right. As usual, Dana enjoyed this a little bit out of sequence, but just as informative as always, going down the Vegas lane. Chris, I got to cut this. I got to wrap this up. We pretty much covered everything there is to cover in the last hour and 18 minutes we're here. I've only got about a minute and a half left on this timer staring at me in the face.
Let's make sure our listeners have it in their books 2 weeks from today, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern, our big mock NHL amateur draft show. You're the master of ceremonies. Myself, Mark Scheig of the Hockey Writers, and Zach Devine of the Hockey Writers, and Hockey Prospects, and Gobbler Prospects, and Prospects, you know, you name it.
Everywhere.
We'll be making the selections everywhere. And, you know, and obviously we'll be on next Saturday as well. But that's always a fun show to do, and it's one of our most listened shows. And go, everyone go back and, like you have, and be listening to our mock expansion draft show you can find on Blog Talk Radio. A lot of people have been listening to those shows, that show, the last couple of weeks. So we thank you for that.
Okay. That's going to do it for this week. Everybody go out, watch some hockey tonight. Enjoy your beverage of choice responsibly. And we will see everybody next week. For Chris, I'm Mark, and we're gone.